Welcome, Lund Loyalists, to John Lund Unleashed. Those watching on YouTube, on the John Lund Unleashed and Bay Area Sports Collective channels. Viewers on X, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Facebook, and Lundos listening to the podcast on Apple and Spotify. John Lund Unleashed, brought to you by Reappell Sports Medicine. Got pain? Check out our revolutionary stem cell treatments. And guys, if low T is bringing you down, Reappell Sports Medicine can put you back in the game. Now all juiced up and ready to go, here's John.
What's happening? Thanks for joining us. Warriors lose 117-110. You see the chalkboard there. We'll get to it in just a second. Roll call. Thank you, thank you, thank you for joining us. John Lund Unleashed on YouTube. Maybe you're watching on the Bay Area Sports Collective. X at John Lund Radio. LinkedIn, Facebook, however you're watching on the platform. Thank you very much. That picture right there is my good friends at Dr. Jeffrey Reappell, Reappell Sports Medicine. Make sure that you stop on by, click on that right there. You can get an appointment or find out more information about how you can feel better with stem cell. My wife is doing it. I told you, the shoulder, the elbow, she's never icing anymore. It's amazing. That freezer that we have in the garage doesn't get used anymore with all those contraptions she used to use. I told you weeks ago we were in Vegas and she could walk around and it was all because of the stem cell that Dr. Reappell is doing. And I told you this, he was one of the first in California to do stem cell treatments. Did him on athletes like Bartolo Colon. He helped him, and Bartolo played forever. I'm not saying there's a connection, but you never know. But it is incredible, absolutely incredible what it can do for your pain. So check out Dr. Jeffrey Reappell. You can click on that QR code right there, or you can just simply go Google it. Jeffrey Reappell, San Ramon. Reappell is R-O-I-R-I-O-R-I-O-P-E-L-L-E. Reappell, Dr. Jeffrey Reappell. And I tell you, I'm doing the stem cell treatment, or she's doing the stem cell treatment. I'm doing the low T, which I just did a couple of weeks ago to get an update. So about every 4 months, I do it, quick blood test. Okay, this is how low you are. Boom, get you to that point. Nothing more, nothing less. You feel great. You feel like yourself. Metabolism is moving quickly. It's absolutely awesome. So I do the low T, and I used to have to do weekly shots. No more. Just about every 4 months, do a quick procedure. It's really, really easy, and you're going to feel like yourself again. So if you got low T, get it checked out, because if you're cranky, you can't lose weight, you're getting a little bit older, that is going to be the culprit most likely, and it has really helped me. So check out Dr. Jeffrey Reappell, Reappell Sports Medicine. Again, one more time, click on that QR code, and you are good to go, or you can Google it, Jeffrey Reappell, San Ramon. They do all sorts of other procedures as well, not just stem cell, not just low T, so check them out. Great sponsor of the show, and we would love it if you would be nice to our sponsors. And that's Dr. Reappell and Reappell Sports Medicine. All right, let's get going. Episode 139. As you know by now, Minnesota 117, Golden State 110, Series 3-1. And as we put on the show cover today, can Curry save the Warriors? It is doubtful, but we'll discuss in episode 139 today. Could he be Superman and come off the bench and save this thing? They just need one. So we'll see about that. It's been the Edwards and Randall show, especially in the third quarter. Anthony Edwards, and I told you this yesterday during the show, was getting nervous because this dude was getting hot in the first couple of games. Anthony Edwards was a factor. He always is, but he wasn't what he is now, which is one of the best players in the league when he's playing like this, inside, outside. It doesn't matter who's covering him. He can go over you. He can shoot over you. He can rise over you. He can get to the rim. He can do everything offensively. And he'll tell you about it as he's doing it. And then Julius Randle, who got traded from the Knicks at the beginning of the season, there was like, trading Carl Anthony Towns, this dude, what? He's been a star in this series, a triple-double the last game. And then this game, he scores 31-19 in the first half, absolutely dominated. Third quarter was the difference. Remember the Warriors used to do those third quarter runs on people? Well, it was Minnesota. The Warriors actually had a 42-40 lead going in. But 39-17 in that third quarter, Anthony Edwards had 16 of his points there. Three ball without Steph Curry, and you'll hear Steve Kerr talk about it. They get outscored or outshot 16-8. Quick math, which we hate doing on the show. 8 times 3 is 24, minus 24 in the three-point category. Not good. Starters, Minnesota 90-57. In fact, Edwards and Randall alone had 61, so that was not good. JK again. The Warriors' best player with 23 after a 30-point performance. Maybe Jimmy was tired. Maybe he's not feeling good. You know what? At this time of the year, you hear me say this all the time, there are excuses and there are explanations. That's an excuse. Don't care. Can't be tired. Can't be this. Can't be that. I get it. You're 35 years old, but you wanted the big contract extension. You're Batman. You've been it before, and only 9 shots, 14 points, and Steve Kerr was saving him for some reason, for what? I don't know. You don't do that during games in the playoffs. You don't do that when it's a critical game, and might as well have been a game 7 last night because you're not coming back 3-1. Playoff-wise, Jason Tatum goes down. We'll get into that. The Mavs win the lotto. Yep, I'm a conspiracy theorist and think it was a conspiracy on that whole thing. Other things going on. Spurs, Rockets, I'll explain what that means. No international game for the 49ers. Those are out. I'll pop those on the screen for you today. Giants offense. I'm not overly concerned, but I'll give you something to look at. Caboose Pistol, Sweet Clean Family. I don't know if I popped that on the screen, but we'll discuss it. I'll find it because I know the story of it. Random things happen throughout the show if you're new around here. And again, I love that you're watching on X or any other type of platform. But if you would jump over here and subscribe to us on YouTube, John Lund Unleashed, that would be outstanding. That way you can hang out, and at least if you don't want to participate, you can be in the chat room. It's a great community that we've fostered and continue to grow around here. So that's a reason why you should come over here and hang out with people and talk some sports. If you got the time, that would be tremendous. But also if you hit us up with a like, that would be greatly appreciated for all of this fine entertainment. That's all I'm asking. And also kick those alerts on because you never know when we're going to pop on. We do Warriors post game shows, all sorts of stuff. I told you when the full schedule is released in the NFL tomorrow, we'll get the pens out and we'll play. You know, the L is a red L and W is that, what is it? I guess we do a green for a green light green. And we do the win loss game, which is always fun. It's sweeping the nation, the win loss game, everybody. So we'll do that for you tomorrow night. So make sure that you, right when the schedule gets released. So make sure I keep hitting this space bar, which pops that up. Sorry about that. Anyway, we'll get into that tomorrow as well. So keep those alerts on throughout the day at John Lund Unleashed, as well as the Bay Area Sports Collective. And again, thanks for watching on X, Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, all those different places. But we'd love it if you'd migrate over to YouTube at John Lund Unleashed. All right, we got a ton of videos, sweet pictures, and nice things like that. Good morning to everybody this morning. Very much appreciated your participation in the show today. Sorry, I couldn't see that one. That's look at that. That is very nice. I love that. Look at that. Very cool, man. Good morning to everyone. Hurley Bird, it is very cool to see you this morning. Fiend, I love Fiend. Skills, it is always really nice. Okay, we got to stop. We got to stop every time this happens. If you're new in here, this is one of the benefits for being in the chat room. You get a skills report dream every once in a while. Here we go. Passed it at my desk. Dream, my cousin needed a place to stay. I told him he could stay with me if he helped with the expenses. He ran through the wall, leaving a man-shaped hole behind and booked it. Kind of like the Kool-Aid Man, right? Hey, hey, hey. No, that's Fat Albert. What do we got? What does Kool-Aid Man say? Anyway, if you're watching the Seth Rogen, what is it, the studio, and they're doing, you know, the Kool-Aid thing, and Ice Cube got all pissed off last week. Great series that you should be watching on Apple TV, but I shouldn't give him a free plug. But anyway, yeah, I kind of look at it like that, kind of. Anyway, you always love when Skills shares his dreams. That is a bonus of being in here today. Good morning to Jake this morning. Hello. Taylor, it is great to see you this morning. Sorry, I'm having problems with my eyes this morning. They haven't quite woken up yet. John, good morning to you. Jake, good morning to you. Daniel, hello, hello. John Harder is here this morning. James, good to see you. Pine Needle, always, always. Team Testosterone, I like it. Team Testosterone. Why is that not showing on the screen? Come on, man. I like that, and I want to pop it up there. There we go. Hope everybody is good on Team Testosterone. James, did I mention James this morning? Christian, it is great to see you, my friend. Joy, always a joy. JJ Raid. Oh, we already have a super today, which is outstanding. We'll get to that in a second. Scott, it is great to see you. Folsom Steve, rocking new eras here. So again, if I didn't get to you, Aussie rules. I like it, man. So let's make sure that we jump in the room, say hello. If you're new around here, please say hello. We'd love to say hello to you. And do remember, you don't have to agree with things I say. I say crazy stuff and you're like, you're crazy. So that's okay. This is a safe zone for everybody and we've put together a great community. So welcome to everybody. And do remember, if you absolutely 100% want to get your comments on the show, all you got to do is hit me up with a super and it is always greatly appreciated like this. Daniel, Royal Pay 916. I like that you keep doing this. Keep changing it. Nico trade Luka. Don't strip the Lakers bare. Get flag. Yeah, we'll get into that, man. That I am a conspiracy theorist. I think you're crazy if you think that sports is on the up and up. Everything in our country and around the world is shady, right? Politics certainly are. Business absolutely is. So for some reason, people think that this multi-billion dollar, these multi-billion dollar businesses of sports are all in the up and up. I don't buy it. And yesterday, I think, was another example of it. I'm such a dork that I took the, you know, when you go to Tankathon, you go to Tankathon online and you can run the lottery yourself. Actually, just hit it. I think I hit it. I'm not even kidding you, over like 110 times, and I finally got the Mavericks at the top. I just don't buy it. It just 1.8%, really? You traded Luka to the Lakers. The NBA says, thank you. Not that Dallas is a small market. It's not. It's the fifth largest media market in the country. But LA's number two. We know what the Lakers mean to the league, the Lakers' success. LeBron's getting going. And they need a young guy. And there's a 26-year-old generational point guard that people love. And all of a sudden, it's like, oh, he goes to the Lakers. And it's a terrible trade for Dallas. And then they get the first pick, which is Cooper Flagg. Interesting. And we'll also get into what it means for the Spurs at two. I think the West... It was a bad day for the Warriors yesterday. I'll get into that a little bit later, but it was a really bad day for the Warriors yesterday. Not just because they lost to Minnesota and it looks like their season is going to be over here in short order, Wednesday to be specific, but also just because Dallas just got better getting the number one pick. That's a playoff team, probably with Cooper Flagg. San Antonio got better, and I'll explain that. Not with a number two pick. They're going to trade that thing. I think Houston's going to make a move. Anyway, that's going to make the rest of the Western Conference that much better, and the Warriors are getting that much older, and we saw it last night. So let's get into everything, and good morning to everyone. John Lund Unleashed on YouTube. Let's start it up. The chalkboard is everything, so episode 139, 117, 110. Let me pop things up on the board for you so we can have a conversation about what the box score looked like last night. The box score is not everything, but it's certainly going to tell us a few things about what happened last night and why the Warriors struggled so much. There is your box score. All right, a few things pop out, obviously. First and foremost, at the top there, Julius Randle, 31, as I said. He had 19 of those 31 in the first half and was dominant inside, outside. Everything. Anthony Edwards hadn't really woken up in this series. First two games was just okay. And then he hit the button on the second half in game three, scored 28 of his, 36 in the second half. And then yesterday, he was okay. And then got going late in the first half. And then the third quarter, he was, if he was playing NBA Jam, he's on fire. He goes 11 of 21, 6 of 11, 30 points, 16 of those 30 in the third quarter. Then they gave him a rest at the end of the third, and they really didn't need him. The Warriors with their backups made a bit of a run, so then they had to put him in a little bit. But 33 minutes, they kind of just said at the beginning of the fourth quarter, hey, we'll break glass if we need you, but we don't think we need you, and they brought him in real quickly. But he's been the story. He and Julius Randle, 61 points combined last night, and they've been the best two players in the series. So if the best two players in the series are on one team, that team's going to be up 3-1. There's that aspect. Another aspect of it is if you look at minutes played, Jaden McDaniels played over 40. Julius Randle played over 40. As I said, because of the timing, Edwards only played 33 because he took the rest at the end of the third quarter. But you're seeing that Minnesota didn't play a deep bench. DiVincenzo's probably been their worst player. In fact, he has, and he played 25. So I'm a little surprised by that. But they don't have a whole lot of depth on that team. Chris Finch, their head coach, played last night's game like it was a critical game to win, even though they were up 2-1 and it could have tied it and they'd have been okay. And the reason why he played that way, game seven-ish, is because he doesn't want to see Steph Curry back in this series, because obviously he knows what that means. We all do. And so what the Warriors were trying to do, and I said this right when Curry got injured, just win one more game. So if you can get this thing 2-2, and even if Minnesota's up 3-2 and you got 2 games left in this series, Steph supposedly was going to return for game six. And I don't hate your chances with Steph Curry down 3-2. I mean, then you win one at home, and then it's a game seven in Minnesota. So Finch knew that he didn't want any part of that, and he played his guys a lot of minutes. Conversely, the Warriors, and whether it was Jimmy Butler, was tired. In the second quarter, he's resting Jimmy Butler from the 4-minute mark in. And before the game, he said he was going to have to watch Jimmy Butler's minutes because he played him a lot of minutes. And obviously, Jimmy had a lot of usage with the ball in his hands. and he might be tired at the age of 35. I understand that, but you can't save a player in a game seven-ish situation like last night was, because let's be honest, they're not coming back from 3-1. There's no point in saving a guy for later in the game if there might not be a later in the game. And in this game, there wasn't a later in the game. They were already out of the game. So Jimmy Butler tried to come back in. He could not be the aggressive player, was not the aggressive player that he was in game three, which was their best chance to win that second game that they needed to elongate the series so that Steph Curry could return. But only 9 shots in those 34 minutes, 14 points. That's not going to get it done. He's supposed to be Batman with Curry out, and he's only been that guy once. So I'm sorry that Jimmy is tired. I'm sorry that Jimmy is old. I'm sorry that his bruise, probably that pelvic bruise, is probably rearing its ugly head and being fairly painful. I get all those things. But as I often say, there are excuses and there are explanations, and Jimmy Butler being tired is an excuse. Draymond Green wasn't bad. Buddy Hield, just as we said at the beginning, wasn't going to be Steph Curry. Even though he had flashes, that's what he does. He gives you flashes. He's inconsistent. We'll hear from Steve Kerr on Brandon Podziemski. I completely disagree with him. He was horrid last night. He has no confidence in his shot. 3 of 14 from the floor, 0 of 4, and he did not give you his usual self. 3 rebounds, 1 assist, not going to get it done. A couple of turnovers. He was just not himself, and it's starting to affect the rest of his game. Normally, you know, it's like baseball. A guy who can separate his field from his hitting, it's affecting everything now on Brandon Podziemski. And I'm not saying he's a bad player, they should trade him, anything like that. It's just bad timing that when Steph Curry goes out, Brandon Podziemski's playing his worst basketball of the year. GP2 hasn't really been a factor in this series, not enough at least. And you can put him on Edwards, doesn't matter. Too many times Edwards last night was matched up with Buddy Hield in some of that heat check, and it just wasn't going to work. And Peyton, doesn't matter who it is, GP2 is a really nice on-ball defender. He's not going to stop Anthony Edwards. He's not big enough. He just goes right over him. Jonathan Kuminga has been the best player since Steph Curry left. He gets 23 after an easy 30. Looney had 8 rebounds in the first half, and then the rest of the guys were just playing garbage minutes. So that's what it looked like. But the big thing right there, and you can see under the 3 there, 39-17 in the third quarter. That's what did in the Warriors. So that's a little peruse at the box score, and the Warriors are down 3-1. So there are a couple of things that you need to know about last night's game. All right, let's have some fun with some audio. Here's Steve Kerr. This is courtesy of our good friend Anthony Slater, who does a great job with The Athletic covering the Warriors, and they covered a number of topics with Steve Kerr. So this is about a minute and a half. Let's have Steve talk, and then let's discuss, you and I.
With that said, we'll look at the tape and see where we can find some openings for him, and I know he'll be aggressive for game 5.
Steve, another tough shooting night for Brandon, but at what point does he just have to make shots for you guys to be successful in the series?
Well, again, it's the series changed with Steph's injury, so everybody's shots are going to be more difficult. There's just, you know, Steph's a guy who breaks the defense down for us and creates that offensive flow. And I think the end result is that shots are more difficult for every single guy. I thought BP played really hard tonight, did some really good things. We pushed the tempo, you know, we scored 60 points in the first half. So we did some good things, we just couldn't sustain it overall.
All right, I'll go back to Steve in just a second, but I don't want to forget this. I used this term yesterday, and what used to happen in the NBA, and in all sports, to be frank with you, is that coaches would just say what was on their mind a lot of times. The media wasn't as, you know, you're totally scrutinized for everything that you say. Everybody, you know, the next day it's played back. Why did Steve say this? Why did Steve say that? And you had one way that you treated players, at least Don Nelson. Well, that's not accurate. If you treated role players versus star players, star players have always had the star treatment. You're not going to rip star players. Maybe you will once in a while, Greg Popovich or something like that. Everybody knows kind of the way that their team works, right? So do I use candy or criticism, right? Certain players you cannot criticize. You can't rip them. You can't, because they'll just go into a shell and they'll play worse. Other players, that's what you have to do to wake them up. So it's nowadays, it's each individual player, whether they're a superstar or not, you've got to treat them a certain way. And they know, these guys have a phone in their hands, and they're going to look at, what did Steve Kerr say about me in the post game. So they're all just, you have to deal with all these personalities. I don't know how they do it, to be honest with you, like a Bob Melvin. He's got 25 guys in his clubhouse, and it's a diverse group of players, and it's, you got to be careful what you say. Same thing in the NFL. You got, you know, 53 of these guys up on game day, and I mean, what exactly are you going to say? Anyway, you just got to be really careful, and you got to get to know everybody. So in the NBA, it's a little bit easier, but Steve Kerr just said nice things about Brandon Podziemski when Brandon Podziemski, maybe that's his worst game of the year. I mean, early in the year, he wasn't very good, but certainly given the circumstances and how big last night's game was, because like I said, it was game seven-ish. They're not going to win this series down 3-1. And so that was a critical game last night. Whatever you want to call it is fine. But Brandon Podziemski was horrid. He was awful. And Steve Kerr knows that he can't say that about him or he'll go further into a shell. I don't know how much more he can lose confidence because you can just see it on the floor. He's a guy that generally oozes confidence. He took some charges last night. He played his usual hard way, but he's lost out there. And I will give him this credit. As I said before this game, he was taking shots not within the context of the offense. He was pounding the hell out of, he was pounding the air out of the ball and then jacking up some shot, and just, it wasn't working. He only did that to my count twice last night. But, you know, he's blowing layups, he's blowing teardrops, he's hitting, he's missing shots that he normally would make. He'd be a guy that could drive into the chest of Rudy Gobert and then fade back and shoot over him. I mean, you know, to really take advantage of Gobert not wanting to come out. And they haven't done that in this series very much. Kuminga's done it a few times. Jimmy Butler's done it a few times where you got to make Rudy Gobert move. And the Warriors have had a lot of success doing that in the past against the Timberwolves. And it's been a good matchup for them, but they're just not able to do that in this series. And Gobert has been effective for the most part. So they're not doing that. There's a lot of things offensively they're not doing. But as far as Podziemski is concerned, clearly Steve Kerr believes that candy over criticism for Brandon Podziemski because he doesn't want to hurt his confidence anymore. So that's what that was, because a lot of people are going to go, well, he says he's playing fine. He's not. He's playing horribly. And last night he was awful, and they needed him, and this is a crunch time. And I tell you this all the time. It's hard to criticize a guy whose shots aren't going down, because shooting's really difficult and you can do all these different things. So it's not like Brandon Podziemski's like Buddy Hield, in that if Buddy Hield's shot's not going, and he's been better defensively in this series and he's done a few things, but that's not his calling card. Either Buddy Hield is shooting the ball and that makes him an effective player, or he's not. And if he's not shooting the ball, there's not a whole lot of reason for him to be in the game. Brandon Podziemski will grab rebounds, dish assists, handle the ball, play defense, draw a charge, play generally with energy, and he'll add a lot to the table, even if he's not shooting. But they need him to shoot well because Steph Curry is out. And I think the number, and I think Danny Ammerman had it, and I think I have it here. Here it is right here. 9 for 40, 22.5% in four games in this series, the worst of any player in a series with 35-plus shots since Piro Antic shot 16.7. So, I mean, that he's historically bad in this series. And yet you just heard Steve Kerr go, now he's doing some good things. Maybe, you know, I really like the guy. It's just tough to shoot without Steph. I don't care. That's an excuse. That's not an explanation. That's an excuse. Everybody knows it's tough without Steph. So what? It's tough for a lot of guys when their guy is not in the game. It's not like they've been just absolutely crushing Brandon Podziemski on that side of the floor. He's been missing shots even when Curry was in the game. He scored 26 against Houston. That's the only game he's had in this playoffs that's been worth a shit. So he's been terrible. And there's no other way to put it. And now I think it's starting to affect other parts of his game. He took a nice charge from Julius Randle on a phantom play that he took a dive on a screen. Things like that than he normally does. I'm not down on Brandon Podziemski, and I'm not dogging the guy. I'm just being honest. He's just not playing well enough, and his shots aren't going down, and now he's starting to lose a ton of confidence. And at some point, if you're Steve Kerr, because he always plays him a ton of minutes, he should have – this is where I have the criticism on Kerr. How much did Podziemski – Podziemski played 33 minutes, and a bunch of guys – you know, played junk minutes. So he played the fourth most minutes, and the starters, like I got on the screen there, they were outscored 90-57 last night. And Podziemski's a big part of that. So if you're Steve Kerr, and he should have done this last night, if somebody's not effective, you don't have the rope to allow them to suck, continue to suck. You got to bring somebody else in there. And I know Moody hasn't been very good. I get it. But then you've got to play guys more minutes or whatever the case may be. And that's what Minnesota did last night. They want no part of Steph Curry returning in this series. So what did they do? They played guys more minutes. They treated it like it was a critical game for them, even though they were up 2-1. And Steve Kerr didn't coach that way, I didn't believe, last night. I don't care if Jimmy Butler's tired. He's your best chance. He's your Batman. He's got to play. I don't care. I say this all the time. It's like a pitcher who's got a blazing 102-mile-an-hour fastball trying to fool hitters with changeups and sliders. And dude, if you're going to get beat, You get beat with your best. That's how it goes. And then you can live with yourself in the morning. But if you don't get beat with your best, then you're going to ask yourself, why didn't I just play my best? And that's the cards. Jimmy Butler's got to play 40. I don't care. He's got to play 40. And if that's not good enough, I can live with myself. You've got to play your best players. And if they can't get it done, then you can't win. But last night, Minnesota went pedal to the metal and said, we're going to win. Even when there was a hint with their backups on the floor, Golden State had their backups on the floor. They're waving the white flag. Minnesota still had their starters in. We're not chancing Steph Curry coming back to this series. That's how it should have been last night. That was a critical game to go down 3-1 in Minnesota going home. And the likelihood of Steph Curry playing is remote. Now, if he comes back, who knows? And we're going to hear from Steve Kerr on that in just a second. If he comes back, who knows? It could be different, but the hamstring injury is not a pain tolerance thing. It's something that can get worse. Rick Celebrini, the crew, the medical crew for the Warriors, even though Steph Curry has an entire offseason to potentially recover from something if his hamstring gets worse, which it could, I don't see them putting him in that position. I just don't. I think the organization has way too much respect for Steph Curry than to run him out there Willis Reed style and say, give us what you got. Let's see if you can inspire this team. I just don't think they'll do that. And a lot of it has to do with Steph, and he's never had this kind of injury. That's a major part of this is, you know, when it grabs or when it, Steph doesn't know. For once in his career, it's like, I haven't experienced this. Sorry. He's not going to feel comfortable going out there. I find it a very low percentage that Steph would play in game 5. And the reports were that he wasn't going to come back for game 6, which is why they needed to win one of these games. So here is Steve Kerr talking about, or asked a hypothetical, I think this is Scott Osler, a hypothetical about what if Steph was feeling better, would you play him in game 5?
There's a possibility he would be overruled.
When are we giving the update? Wednesday we'll have an update.
And you see him smile there because he doesn't want to answer the question. Now, he didn't completely rule him out. And as we said, Shams Charania is the one who said he wasn't going to play until game 6. Does this change that? Does being down 3-1 with their season on the brink and you traded for Jimmy Butler and you went over the tax again and all these kind of things, and I'm going to get to the fact that the West is going to be better next year because Dallas won the lottery. That's a playoff team all of a sudden. San Antonio, I think, is going to trade 2 and get a better player. Houston's not going to just sit there, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You're getting older. The West is getting better. This might be their last best chance, to be honest. I mean, next year, Jimmy's a year older. Steph's a year older. Dre's a year older. They're going to try to get a big and trade Kuminga. I don't know if that makes you better or not, but that they're going to do that because they're already dedicated to going in this direction. But I'll get into that in depth in just a second. But this might be their best last chance because the West's getting better. It's not getting worse. It's getting better. And so Steph Curry and what Scott Osler was asking, I kind of cut the question off, is if the medical staff says Steph's not good and Steph says, look, I want to go. I'm Steph Curry. I've done so many things for the franchise. You owe me one. I want to try. Do they just say, okay, Steph says he wants to try? Maybe. How effective can he be? I don't know. By his very presence on the court, does that change things offensively? Certainly. I mean, you have to respect Steph. You have to see how he's moving, but you have to respect him. But I don't see it. I don't see them allowing him to take that chance. I don't think Steph Curry has the ultimate say in his own health. I know that sounds weird, but I think it's going to be the medical staff because they don't want it on their shoulders if Steph Curry rips this thing from the bone and has to rehab this thing the entire offseason instead of, you know, doing the stuff to keep himself in shape. This thing will recover in a couple of weeks. But if this thing rips from the bone, then I don't know, what is he looking at? A month, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, whatever the case may be, and all of a sudden the season's upon you. And I don't see the organization doing that. I think they have far too much respect for Steph Curry and what he's accomplished to do it, but who knows? Here is Draymond Green on the potential return of a Superman type of a situation with Steph Curry returning and saving the season.
No, we're not going Superman this thing. If he's in a place where he could play, I'm sure he will, and him and Rick and everybody will figure that out, but we don't need Superman.
I disagree. You do need Superman. You do need Steph Curry. They haven't shown it so far. Will they show championship medal in this game against Minnesota? I'd like to think so. But the thing is if Jimmy is gassed and can only play 34 minutes in a critical night, how effective will he be? He's only shown once in this series that he can be Superman, speaking of, or be Batman. Buddy Hield showed in one half that he could be Robin, not consistent enough. Brandon Podziemski has been, as I said, horrid. Moses Moody hit his first shot you know, if you just look at it across the board, Dante DiVincenzo hasn't been very good for Minnesota. Outside of that, everybody on their team has been great. This is the best Rudy Gobert's played against the Warriors in years. Julius Randle has been amazing. He's been better than Karl-Anthony Towns ever was against the Warriors. Karl-Anthony Towns seemed to be intimidated by Draymond Green. Julius Randle sure as hell isn't. Anthony Edwards is playing and laughing and doing all those kind of things. He wasn't great, like I said, for about six quarters in this series. He wasn't very good. And then he got things rolling. And in the last two games, especially in the second half, he's just been the best player on the floor and maybe one of the best, and definitely one of the best players in the league. So when their best players, their first two players are the best players in the series, when generally their players are playing much better than your players, it's going to be really difficult. And I said this last night in the postgame show, and I believe it. I don't think they're winning this series even with Steph Curry, unless Steph Curry is just absolutely great. And I get it. Things are harder without Steph, all this kind of things. Injuries are an excuse, not an explanation. Guys get hurt all the time. That's what it's all about. You play the 82 games, and then you play the 16-game sprint, and who can hold up and who can't, and all these kind of things. And Steph Curry's hamstring gave way. That's too bad. The Warriors won championships based on the fact, or that were certainly helped out by guys who were hurt. And conversely, in the Toronto series, their guys got hurt. I mean, it's just part of the game. It's part of every single sport, from amateur all the way up to the professional. And it's just part of the game, and it's an excuse when you talk about it. So would they be better in this series? Would it be 2-2? Maybe. But Minnesota has far outplayed the Warriors in this series. So even if Steph Curry returns, the Warriors probably don't win the series. If Steph Curry is here the whole time, I don't think the Warriors win the series. Minnesota has just flat out been better. And one of the reasons they have, amongst the things that I'm just talking about, they have played better in crunch time. They've played better in the second half. They've had the best two players. They've, for the most part, used their size, strength, and that kind of an advantage. And that's why in the offseason, the Warriors are unfortunately going to move Jonathan Kuminga, who's been their best player in the series, and they're going to try to get a big. Now, whether that be Miles Turner, I don't know why Miles Turner would leave Indiana. I mean, that's the guy that I would want if I were the Warriors. He'd be number one on my list. But why would he leave Indiana? I mean, he's a free agent, so they can give him the most years and the most money, and they seem to have a brighter future than what the Warriors do with what they're doing. It'll be their second consecutive time when they do away with the Cavs, and they're up 3-1 in the series, and the Cavaliers are banged up. They would go to the conference finals against the Knicks, and I'll get to Jason Tatum in a minute. But they're up 3-1, so that'd be the second consecutive year that they'd be in the conference finals, and they have young players and good players, and the Eastern Conference is easier than the Western Conference. If I'm Miles Turner, I don't know. Unless Indiana doesn't pay me, I don't know why he would do it, because he would have to agree to a sign and trade, because obviously the Warriors are way over the number, and then Indiana would think to themselves, oh, we really like Jonathan Kuminga, when they've already got players that play his position on that roster. So it doesn't make a lot of sense. But is it going to be, you know, Naz Reid's a free agent, Bobby Portis is out there, Lauri Markkanen revisited, you know, something like that. They're going to go after size in the offseason, because it's clear in both of these first two series, they get by the Rockets. They're not going to get by Minnesota, but one of the big reasons why is lack of size. And the Western Conference has size. Denver has size. Oklahoma City has size. Every team that you play, maybe outside of the Lakers who traded their size away, Dallas now has size. San Antonio is going to be better, has size. Houston, we just said, has size. You're going to run up against these teams in this conference constantly. And that's their biggest Achilles heel, other than obviously the injury to Steph Curry right now, but they just lack size. And Draymond Green's getting gassed too. I mean, he's playing the five way too much. And that's just kind of what's going on in this series and what's gone on in the playoffs to this particular point. So recapping real quick, episode 139, 117, 110, Warriors go down. 3-1 series, Minnesota. Edwards and Randle have been the best two players. Third quarter, the culprit last night, 39-17. Three ball last night, 16-8. On shots made, so that's plus 8 times 3, minus 24 in the three ball. That's not going to get it done. Starters for Minnesota, 90-57 over the Warriors last night. JK was the best player for the Warriors at 23 points after scoring 30 the game before. Tired Jimmy, that's an excuse, 5-9 for 14 points. And Steve Kerr, I thought, pulled him too early in the second quarter when they could have extended that lead a little bit more. Because he wanted to save him for later, and there wasn't a later last night because of what happened in the third quarter. So there you go. That's the Warriors side of things, and it looks fairly grim. And I'll get to the rest of the NBA playoffs and Jason Tatum and the lottery and everything like that in just a second. But we have spent a quality 34 minutes on the Warriors game last night, and I got some more supers that I'm going to get to in just a second. Remember, supers will automatically guarantee that you're going to get on the board. So give me your thoughts about last night. Give me your thoughts on what you think of the Warriors so far. Could Steph save the season? I don't even think if he comes back, they could save the season. Hi, JR. Giannis, whatever it takes. You know, since you said that, let me put a pin in that for just a second, because I am going to talk about that. And in every time, because we went into this, what, yesterday, I think, when Chams had the story that maybe, just maybe, Giannis has said, my time in Milwaukee is done, which it is. You know, there's no Chris Middleton. He's in Washington. Damian Lillard, that holiday Lillard trade was an absolute disaster for Milwaukee. Giannis is looking at this thing going, we're not going anywhere. And they're going to trade him in this offseason. I really believe that. My Keurig died today after 6 years. Here's some money. I should pay you, man. You know, I used to have a nice Keurig, and my wife didn't like it. She didn't like the pods. Speaking of pods. And so we got this whole new one, and I wish I had saved it for you because it was beautiful. It was nice silver, nice looking one. And I think we gave it away to somebody, and I should have waited for you. I didn't know your Keurig died. I like those things, man. Just a quick pod, boom, you got your coffee. It's hot, nice. So I'm sorry about that, but thank you for putting in the $4.17. I'm sorry that your Keurig died today, man. That's too bad, because I'll tell you, my wife, she'd be right. She'd be doing the DoorDash to Starbucks. I know. It's so embarrassing. Like, I'll hear a knock on the door. They just knock on the door and they leave it, and I'll walk out because I'm up early, and I'll see, and she'll have a cup of coffee there. And I'm like, you made a guy come over and just deliver coffee? I mean, come on, man. Can't do that. Absolutely. So anyway, I'm sorry that your Keurig died. I feel really bad about that. Let me get to that, since you brought up Giannis, because I know a lot of people are going to do it. So the lottery yesterday, and I am a conspiracy theorist. Let me pop this up on the screen here. I am a conspiracy theorist. So Dallas wins the lotto before the Knicks and Celtics game last night, and Dallas wins the lotto. So the lottery system is stupid. It really is, because the NBA has a bigger problem on their hands now. So if you look at this, the Jazz and the Wizards and the Hornets, they're, to be honest with you, I was in Utah, and it was a good basketball town, but it's a small market, one of the smaller markets in the league. Washington, they have no interest in the Wizards. They haven't for a long time. It's an NFL town. There's very little interest in the Wizards. The Hornets, Michael Jordan leaves them, and there's very little interest in the Hornets. Those are the three teams, and then the Pelicans, New Orleans, which is an incredibly small market as well, even though we love New Orleans. Those markets, which the NBA is not exactly on fire in those markets, were the four markets that had the biggest chance, and you had three teams at 14%. So you're telling me that between the Jazz, the Wizards, and the Hornets, those three teams, none of those teams, and you know where they're drafting? The Jazz are drafting at 5. Or excuse me, the Hornets are drafting at 4, the Jazz are drafting at 5, and the Wizards are drafting at 6. Basically the worst those three teams could have done, all right? That's where those three teams are drafting. And you look on the right there, and the teams that won the lottery, Mavericks, Dallas is a large market, and thank you for trading Luka to the Lakers, so we'll give you a Cooper flag. The Spurs, I'm going to get into in a minute, the 76ers, major market, they love the Sixers there. Then the Hornets, Jazz, Wizards, as I said, the top three teams, 4, 5, 6. That should have gotten a number one pick. They've got to do away with the lottery. And I'm not a Hornets fan, Jazz fan, Wizards fan. Those teams are horrible. All right. They're horrid. Dallas had a 1.8% chance. So they don't want tanking. They think that's the worst thing in the league. Oh, you can't tank. You can't tank. You can't tank. Look, the Jazz suck. The Hornets suck. The Wizards suck. They lack talent. And every single year, they're going to, because this year, it seems like it's a one man draft. Now, some guys will be good. Other drafts are better than other years, but guys come in really young or whatever, and those teams just can't get better. And the NBA doesn't care because, like I said, those top four markets right there in the Pelicans, Hornets, Wizards, and Jazz, they're not really on fire. And Utah's a small market, doesn't get great TV ratings. The Wizards haven't been good or relevant for years. The Hornets, you know, Michael Jordan fled from them. They're more of a college basketball, obviously, than they are an NBA. When's the last time they were relevant? I can't remember. I mean, they've been in a play-in here or there. LaMelo Ball gets some highlights or whatever. But it's the whole conspiracy theory to me goes not only to the Mavericks getting the number one pick, but also just those other teams the NBA doesn't care about. And they're in the abyss. And all of a sudden, they get 4, 5, 6. I'm sorry. Sports isn't on the up and up. It's just not. Politics aren't. Business isn't. Life isn't. It's not fair. That's just the way they're going to do it. They own the league. They want the league to be better. I just don't buy it. I think it's a great big thank you for trading Luka Doncic to the Lakers, which is great for the league to have him in the second largest media market. Ironically enough, when LeBron James' career is winding down, I think LeBron's getting traded in the offseason. 26-year-old Luka Doncic can become the face not only of the Lakers, but of the league in a major market. And for doing that, thank you very much, Nico Harrison, for a boneheaded trade. Here's Cooper Flagg. That's what I think happened, and I'm a conspiracy theorist. I'll admit it 100%, but that is way too coincidental that not only does Dallas get the first pick, but those other teams that the NBA doesn't care about in markets that aren't very big and aren't very enthusiastic for their team all of a sudden are 4, 5, and 6 when they each had a 14% chance. They don't even get in the top three, those three teams, and they had a 14% chance. Right, okay. And the Pelicans had a 12.5% chance. So the top four teams that had chances, what did the Pelicans? I think Pelicans got the 6th pick. So those teams ended up getting or 7th pick, whatever it was. So none of those teams were in the top five, and they had 3 14% chances and 12.5. What are the odds of that? What are the odds of not only the Mavericks getting it a number one, the number one overall pick at 1.8%, but those other teams dropping where they did with three teams at 14% and one at 12.5? Sorry, that's just astronomical. It's like you playing the lottery, and yet somehow it came true. Bunch of bullshit. And I'm not a fan of any of these teams. I'm just saying, go back. Those are the worst teams. They deserve the best player. This lottery system, what it does is it allows the NBA to manipulate the system, and they do. And it's ridiculous. Whatever. Their league, their rules, they can do what they want, but we can see right through it. And you don't have to really be a conspiracy theorist to see it, because the numbers are ridiculously astronomical that not only would Dallas get the first pick, but those other teams would get screwed in the way that they did. It's ridiculous. Now, as far as what it means for the Warriors, it wasn't a good day for the Warriors. Not only did they lose 117-110 to the Timberwolves to go in a 3-1 series hole without Superman Steph Curry, but now all of a sudden you look at the Western Conference, Warriors will be a year older. Joe Lacob was really happy. We're all excited. Jimmy Butler, they got a shot at this thing. Okay, let's look at it now. They're down 3-1 and likely get eliminated in Minnesota on Wednesday. Dallas is all of a sudden relevant with Cooper Flagg. Now it's Cooper Flagg, Anthony Davis, and Kyrie Irving. That's a playoff team. I don't think that's a play-in team. I think that's a playoff team. San Antonio all of a sudden gets the second pick in this whole thing. Nobody's talking about this, but San Antonio doesn't need another young player. They've got Victor Wembanyama. They've got De'Aaron Fox. All of a sudden, they're thinking to themselves, we don't need to add, unless it was Cooper Flagg, they would have kept it. But now they're thinking to themselves, wait a minute, who's in the Giannis sweepstakes? We are. San Antonio has picks 2 and 14. They have a bunch of young players on their roster. They've got to match a salary for Giannis, but Giannis works for them because he's only 30 years old. So all of a sudden, San Antonio's in the best position as far as giving assets to Milwaukee, who clearly needs to rebuild because Damian Lillard's injured as well. So they're going to blow that whole thing up in Milwaukee. Giannis, why would Giannis stay around? He's not going to. He just talked about winning championships and wanting to win more than one and all these kind of things. San Antonio is a perfect fit for him. So all of a sudden, Giannis, Wembanyama, and De'Aaron Fox are there. Plus, they'll trade some young talent, but not all of it. They'll trade the second overall pick in the draft, which Milwaukee will gladly take. So I think Giannis is going to end up in San Antonio in some way, shape, or form. So now they're better than the Warriors. Houston is not going to just sit back. I think Jalen Green is going to be used as bait to try to get a guy like Kevin Durant. They're going to try to expedite the process. Their owner is impatient. So Houston, I believe, is going to try to go out and get somebody in the offseason. So I think even without that, they're probably better than the Warriors next year. Another year of experience. They're younger, more experienced. The Warriors get older. And that was a tough 7-game series as is. So I think Houston's better. San Antonio's better than the Warriors. Dallas is back in the picture in the Western Conference. Oklahoma City's not going to get worse. They're going to get better with experience in the playoffs. Denver needs to get more depth. I think they're questionable. But still, you see where I'm going with this whole thing, which is the Warriors had a bad day on the court. The Warriors may have had a worse day off the court. In Dallas getting Cooper Flagg, in San Antonio getting the second pick and getting more ammunition to trade for one of the great players. Maybe they'll look at Durant, but if I'm them, the way that my roster times out, it's much better to go get Giannis at 30, because now you have a 5-year window. Because, you know, maybe even a 6-year window, depending, you know, Giannis looks like an Adonis. He looks like a god. So it's not like he's going to fall out of shape. So all of a sudden he fits on that team with Wembanyama and with De'Aaron Fox and some young players that they'll keep. They won't trade everybody. As I said, they're in a great position because now they trade the second pick in the draft in Milwaukee. They got to match salaries, all that kind of thing. But I think San Antonio is going to be a monster for the next 5 years. So that's not good. Dallas better, San Antonio better, Houston's going to be better. Oklahoma City's going to be better. There's four teams. I think the Lakers are in the same boat as the Warriors. They're going to have to, I think, use LeBron James to get younger players that fit around Luka better. I think they could, if Cleveland gets knocked out, and it looks like they're going to, this was the scenario I talked about weeks ago, where Cleveland, with their great regular season, if they got knocked out early, that they might go to LA and say, what will it take to get us LeBron James for a swan song? And then LeBron James gets to finish in Cleveland, do his little ego tour to finish his career, hopefully to him, help Cleveland win an NBA championship, put him back over the top with a really good team. And LA gets, you know, a couple of pieces. They're not going to get Mobley out of him. They're not going to get Donovan Mitchell out of him. But, you know, one final swan song season in a Cleveland uniform to try to help the Cavaliers and give some assets to the Lakers, and the Lakers can get players that better match from a timing standpoint. LeBron James, ball dominant at 41, and Luka Doncic, 26, who needs, you know, 3 and D's around him because he doesn't play any defense and he needs shooters to dish like he had in Dallas. He needs the 3 and D. He needs a pick and roll guy. I could totally see that happening with Cleveland and the Lakers. Maybe it's a Jared Allen that goes the other way, whatever the case may be. I could see that, and I could see LeBron doing a finishing tour in Cleveland, and it leaves the Lakers where? I'm not so sure. But, you know, the Lakers, Phoenix, the Warriors, I think are going this way, and I think there's a lot of teams, especially with the lotto yesterday in San Antonio, Dallas, and probably Houston, going the other way with already teams like Oklahoma City, Denver. Clippers are in a weird position as well. But like I said, yesterday, not a good day for the Warriors, and the lotto system needs to be fixed. I mean, I think that should be the impetus to it. Now, look, the NBA, as I said, owns the league, so they don't have to do anything. They don't have to change anything they don't want to change. But it's pretty damn obvious to anybody watching, like I said, not only the Dallas 1.8% winning it, but the teams, as I pointed out, the teams that the NBA has pretty much like basically said, well, you're the abyss. The Jazz, Wizards, and Hornets had the top three, and the Pelicans had the fourth. And you see right there, I think the Pelicans ended up seventh or something. So the Hornets 4, the Jazz 5, the Wizards 6, the Pelicans 7, when they had the four best chances of winning it. New Orleans, small market. Utah, small market. Washington doesn't care. You know, Hornets, small market, and people don't care. They'd rather watch college basketball. They'd rather watch Carolina and Duke. So it's pretty obvious what happened yesterday. You don't have to be a genius to know that. And if you don't agree and you don't believe in conspiracy theorists, that's fine. I totally understand that, but it's ridiculous what happened yesterday, and it certainly didn't help the Warriors. So that's where we are as far as that goes. Playoffs, we haven't gotten Mavs win the lotto is where we are. Spurs Rockets, I just told you about. Let me go back up right here to Tatum goes down. You don't have to be a Celtics fan. You don't have to be, you know, just an NBA fan. You hate seeing it. I have not seen the report on Jason Tatum, so maybe you can help me out with that today. I can look it up, but a non-contact injury looked really bad. And the Knicks, everybody stepped up for the Knicks, and they're up 3-1. So it looks like the Pacers up 3-1 on Cleveland, and Cleveland's banged up. And the Knicks up 3-1 in the Celtics, and so it looks like it's going to be the Pacers and Knicks. I would probably say the Knicks with all their talent. And I've said that all season long. I'm like, how come the Knicks aren't better? They're playing their best basketball at the best time. Jalen Brunson has been absolutely great. Another Dallas mistake. Hey, let him leave. Great idea. They lowballed him on some stuff, pissed him off, and now, you know, he's not there either. And he's been worth every cent for the Knicks. So it looks like they're going to come out of the East, I think. Although you can't count out the Pacers, but I think the Knicks are that good. So the Knicks probably out of the East, and then Minnesota could. They were talking about the broadcast last night. Minnesota could. Oklahoma City, Denver. If it's Denver, I'd pick Minnesota. If it's Oklahoma City, maybe I'd pick Oklahoma City, but certainly Minnesota can come out of the Western Conference. But as far as Jason Tatum is concerned, that's just a bummer. You like to see, you know, guys compete. You don't want to see injuries, especially. You could just kind of tell when they were wheeling him off the court. I don't know if you saw the video, but he was kind of, you know, face and hands kind of a thing, which tells you that it's probably a pretty bad injury. And he's not going to be back. So you hate to see that last night, but that's what happened. And that's what's happening as far as the rest of the playoff series are concerned. Let me make sure I don't have anything left as far as NBA is concerned. What do you got? Any thoughts, questions, comments? NBA playoffs, lotto system. Warriors' chances. Can Steph come back and save this whole thing? By the way, if you missed any of the first almost hour of the show, all you have to do is go back either to the beginning right now, or if you're watching later, thank you very much for watching. All you have to do is go back and go to the chapters if you want to just hear all about the Warriors. Right after the show, we put the chapters up there. So all you have to do, click underneath, click on it. You'll see more, all sorts of links and all sorts of things on the show. And you can watch whatever you want. So we have the chapters on there. You click on exactly what you want to talk about or what you want to hear, I should say. And you are good to go. So you can do that later because we'll jump into a little bit of NFL. We'll jump into a little bit of Giants. I don't know if I have my caboose. I think I forgot to put the caboose in today, which I'm really pissed at myself about. Let's see. If I said good morning to Catalina, I don't think I have. Good morning to you. What else do we have? Anything else? Yeah, when's the last time the Knicks, was it like the Ewing years? When's the last time when the Knicks were in the finals? Anthony Mason and Patrick Ewing. Am I forgetting any time that they were in there? Was that 94, the OJ chase? Was that the last time that the Knicks were in it? I can't remember. Let's see. Yeah, that's a great question, Nutter. I don't know. I don't know why there's so many Achilles injuries, but that's certainly what it looked like. Anytime you have a non-contact and then you can't put any pressure on it and then he's crying in the wheelchair, I think that's probably what it is. And that's still, even though they've come leaps and bounds on that thing, it's still the worst injury in sports. There's no question about it. I don't disagree with that. They need to cut down the regular season. They just won't do it because of finances, unfortunately. Hi, Daryl. Good to see you. Let's see. Warriors. Anything else on Warriors? Okay, that's good. I think we're good for right now. Giannis, what about Giannis? Hi, JR. Giannis will want to play for a big market. I don't think the Spurs will move the needle for him. Players choose where they want to go. You're right. The only thing I would say in regards to the Spurs, they're a little bit different. I know that that Greg Popovich, they kicked El Jefe upstairs, but he still has influence on that organization, and a lot of people like playing for the Spurs because of the way that they treat their players, and Tim Duncan's in the front office, and they're a little bit different. I agree with you. San Antonio is kind of a strange town. I lived in Dallas, worked in Dallas, and at times went down to cover the University of Texas, which is in Austin, not far from San Antonio, and I've covered some series and games down there on the Riverwalk and everything. And San Antonio isn't for everybody, but I do think from an NBA sense, even though, and you're right, that it's a small market and a lot of people wouldn't want to go there. Giannis has been playing in Milwaukee, and the NBA, you can be a superstar anywhere. I think that with Victor Wembanyama there and with making the trade for De'Aaron Fox, I think that the NBA would be okay with Giannis going down there to South Texas. Like you said, it's not a major market or anything like that, but the NBA did quite well, thank you very much, when Tim Duncan and the boys were dominating the league for, 20 years? And they didn't do anything to stop that. So Popovich is still involved with the Warriors. I know he's not the head coach, but a lot of people respect him so much that with him still being affiliated with the organization, and I think that's part of the reason why San Antonio continued to do that. I don't know how much Greg Popovich is going to be involved in the front office, but having his name associated with the Spurs, I think, changes some teams. I think that you look at the other thing is you look at Wembanyama. I think a lot of guys would want to play with him. I think that a lot of people see that they're kind of the next. And so you're right. You are right about the fact that players will dictate where they're going to play. You're not wrong in that. Players are going to dictate where they're going to play. And so if Giannis doesn't want to go to San Antonio, that's not happening. That's why the Miles Turner thing, I bring the Miles Turner thing up because he's really the perfect fit for what the Warriors need to do in the offseason. But I started thinking to myself, why would Miles Turner want to come here? He's got a great situation with the Pacers. They can pay him the most years, the most money. Now, maybe they won't. And that frustrate him, piss him off. And then he'll say, I'm not going to resign with you, so try to get what you can. And I don't know. Like I said, I don't know what Kuminga's trade value is around the league. Like, you're not doing straight up. Kuminga signs a contract. Miles Turner signs a contract. You're not doing that straight up. And I look at Indiana and I say, well, if they move him, then they clearly need size. And they've already got a roster full of, twos and threes, on their team. So why would Kuminga fit on that team? He really doesn't. So I always say this, that when you trade somebody or make a move or something like that, or there's a transaction involving players in any sport, you've got to look at the other team, not your team. Like, everybody looks at their team and how it affects their team. They're like, oh, yeah, I'd do that deal. Well, hell yeah, you would, because it's lopsided in your favor. But the thing is that when you have to ask yourself, would this move get the other GM fired? And it might. So that's, we always look at it, and I'm guilty of it too. Oh, I'd love to make that move. Well, what do you think of the other team? Like, does the other team have a dope for a GM? Is he Isaiah Thomas? Because, yeah, then he might make the move. Is he Nico Harrison? Then he might make the move. But most organizations are like, why would I do Miles Turner for Jonathan Kuminga? I've already got those kind of players on my team. I've already got those positions filled. I need a big. And Miles Turner's going, why would I go to the Warriors? Yeah, they need me, but I can get the most money in the most years here. And this team's in the Eastern Conference. The Western Conference is brutal. Why would I want to go there? Compete with all those teams. No, thanks. So I think it's, I think it would be very difficult to get him, but he's the guy. I don't think it's going to be Giannis. Although, like you said, if Giannis said, I am dead set on the Warriors and I want out, and I think the Bucks would accommodate him because he's done, you know, he helped the team win a championship. I think that they would accommodate him. And if he wanted to come here, they would probably do something like that. You know, who knows? But I think Turner's the right fit or perfect fit. I think Giannis is far-fetched. I think that Milwaukee couldn't get the best deal from the Warriors. They could get the best deal from the Spurs or somebody else. But you bring up a good point, which is a lot of times it's the player saying, this is where I want to go. So work out the best deal you possibly can. So we'll see. It's a good point. What else do we have today? All right, in regards to that. No, that one yesterday worked, didn't it? Did it not work? Oh, no, John, no caboose. Make up one old story. No, I did that yesterday, and I thought it worked quite well. Thank you very much. The caboose story that I was talking about today, and maybe I can pull it up out of the New York Post real quick, was a woman. She's 58 years old. You know what? I can just talk about it. You know, I don't need it. I don't need that story. I can just talk about it. I know what it is. All right, I will do a caboose today because I said on the board, I will. I'll do one, and it won't be an old one. But yesterday's story worked, to be honest with you, I think. Could be wrong. All right, let's get to – okay, so we're through the playoffs. We're through the fixed lottery. We're through the Warriors. Any more questions, comments, thoughts? And, again, you can go back to the chapters and click on that if you want to hear more on the Warriors as we're about an hour into the show. All right, a few other things that we must talk about today. No international games for the 49ers. As I said, the full NFL schedule comes out tomorrow is the schedule release. So, I showed you this yesterday, but, the NBC games, the Fox games, Prime Video games, today's Tuesday, ESPN games, full schedule on Wednesday, but we do have the international games. And I think, yeah, no Niners in the international games, and they have not played a true international game since 2013. Don't give me Mexico City. That doesn't count. I'm talking about like going across to Europe and going to Germany or going to, you know, London or going to one of these places, Brazil. I mean, Mexico City, technically it's an international game, but it's not like these games that we're seeing here. So if you look right there, the Vikings actually play back-to-back games. This is crazy. So they play in Dublin against the Steelers. Then the very next weekend, they play at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium in London. They play the very next week against Cleveland, the Brownies. And then you got Hotspur London for the Broncos and the Jets. Then you got the Rams going over there playing Jacksonville, which they want to be actually them, Wembley Stadium. That's where I covered the Raiders and the Dolphins in 2014. Wembley. That was awesome, by the way. It was incredible. I'll tell you about it in a second. Falcons and Colts in Berlin. And then you got the Commandos and the Dolphins. And they're playing in Spain, which is pretty cool. They're playing in Madrid. See, I wished I covered one of those teams. Go to Madrid. Yeah, I'd like to go to Madrid, please. There's the international schedule. No Niners. I did cover Raiders and Dolphins, and the Raiders, I got absolutely blown their doors off. Ryan Tannehill ran all over them. It's crazy, in 2014. And I went out, and I wanted to get the flavor of things. So the Raiders are staying at like a castle. It was really cool, and they did all their media stuff there and all their practices. And I told you about Derek Carr the other day, hung around for an hour answering dumb questions from the London media, and they were all clowning with him and everything. And I'm just like, Derek, you don't have to do this. He was a rookie. So you get a lot of time. So you do the work you do. You go out and you cover the practices and stuff, and you did have plenty of time. And we had an off day too, and you had an opportunity to either go to either stay in London, go to Paris. There was a group going to Paris, and there was a group going to Amsterdam. Where do you think I went? Anyway, that was wild. And then unfortunately, the game was the next day. So you're like, oh my God, I have to cover a game today. But what's wild about the game, at least from a London perspective, is so I wanted to get – I wish I had saved this video. It was so cool. So I wanted to get a sense – and again, this is 11 years ago, so maybe the NFL is different now. But I wanted to get a sense of how much people cared about the NFL. Now, Greg and I, Papa and I broadcast from a place called Talk Sport in London. That's where we did our shows from. And they just, it's kind of like ESPN radio here. It's the national thing. And all those guys, so they put us in like a downstairs studio, and we had guys from their national radio broadcasts on during the week. And we said, how much do people care? And they said, they don't. Like, it's soccer, soccer, soccer. And I listened to their broadcast. I went up a couple of times and hung around a little bit later. And it was just, their talk shows are just all about soccer. Football, their football, but it's just soccer, 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 soccer. They didn't mention the NFL once. Now, this is 2014. It was in their city. They didn't mention the NFL once in their broadcast. And we had their guys on, and they're like, no one cares. And so to say, okay, let me test this theory, I went outside of the biggest Nike store that you've ever seen in your life, right in London. And I stood outside the door when people were coming in, and then people were walking back and forth, and they had literally every team's jersey in there. So it was a big Nike store, and they had one section of the NFL, and they had all the, it was just rows and rows and rows, a huge side of their store, just all NFL jerseys, right? And all the best players at that point in 2014. And I just sat and I interviewed people walking by just in general, right outside the Nike store, and people actually going into the Nike store who were sports fans. And by and large, I'm just going to, not going to individually go down everything, but by and large, if I talked to 50 people, which I did, out of those 50, probably 40 said, not a lot, a whole lot of interest, or all the way down to there's a game this weekend. So I, again, 11 years ago, but I think that the interest in American football is greatly overhyped, but by having these games, they make a lot of money, and the people who are interested go, and the TV rights, you say, hey, we're having a game here, having a game there. They love having it early in the morning, and it makes for a long day of football, and they can own the whole day. So look, there's finances involved in its business, and they like it, and they like being international, and they like trying to grow the sport. So now they're in Spain, and they're in Brazil, and they're in Germany, and they're in London, and so they love doing all this stuff, and they're in Mexico City occasionally. So they love doing this stuff. And it helps for the TV package and all these things, but it's business related. Whether the interest has grown or not, I'm not so sure. I need to have my friend Will Gavin on and ask him, but that was 11 years ago. So I'm in the, and I was in a lot of cabs, and I would ask the cabbies, what's your interest in the NFL? And they'd be like, eh. So from Talk Sport, which is, like I said, their ESPN radio, they weren't real interested. Outside and inside the Nike store, they weren't real interested, even though people were buying jerseys off the rack. And then the coolest part was, I've never experienced this in almost 30 years of doing this and covering lots of games at every level, is you took the media bus over to Wembley Stadium. And as you're approaching, you would normally see the hometown's jerseys or maybe some visitor jerseys. So it was the Raiders and Dolphins. So you'd expect to see a lot of Raiders and Dolphins, right? You didn't. It was like a rainbow. It was every team. There's Joe Namath. There was some Raiders and Dolphins, but I would say that it was just mixed into everything. It was every team represented, and classics and Joe Namath's and, all these different ones and Tom Brady's and, just all these different jerseys from all these different teams. And then you go into Wembley Stadium, and I did the pre-half and post game from there for the Raiders Network. And you're looking around, and it's the same kind of thing. And we had outdoor, they didn't have us in an indoor covered, whatever you want to call it, a media booth. We were out with the crowd, but we were just in a specialized area. So, but I could see, I'm about the 40 yard line, probably just past the first level. So, I've got a good viewpoint of everybody coming into the stadium. And again, it was a rainbow of different teams. Of course there was Raiders and Dolphins. And I would say the majority, if you had to say, was Raiders and Dolphins, but it wasn't by a large margin, like you would see at a Raiders game or a Dolphins game or a home game. It was just this rainbow cornucopia, if you will, of different jerseys, of people. And again, I did the same thing. I walked around and asked people before the game, after I had all my prep work done, and I had probably an hour before the game was going to start. And I just asked people about the NFL, and it was more just, it was an event. It was a place to be. It was a cool thing. They were curious. It was just, it wasn't like a lot of people were like, yeah, I love this guy, I love that guy. You'd run into a guy who was like, oh yeah, Raider Nation and this and that, or you'd run into a fan who had come over or something like that. But the majority of people, it wasn't like they were just dying for NFL football. So maybe in 11 years that's changed, but it's done for financial and business reasons. And they continue to say that they're trying to grow the game, and maybe they are, maybe they're not. I've also done Super Bowls and hung out with lots of guys. Like I said, Will Gavin does great play-by-play. He's a huge Niners fan, and he's in London. I met guys from Ireland and Germany and all, because he's friends with all these guys. And so we'll go out, we'll drink some Guinnesses during Super Bowl week, like we did, for example, in Las Vegas. And I've seen Will Gavin at like four or five different Super Bowls, and we talk all about it all the time. So he's a great guy. He's a great source. So I need to get him on and ask him about these international games. But again, this is back in 2014 when I covered it. And I think that the interest is being overblown, but that's just my own personal experience. I could be wrong, but that all under the guise of, if you look at the chalkboard, no international games for the 49ers. So there you go. As far as the Giants are concerned, this is their last 10 games. And I went into this exercise thinking that they weren't scoring any runs. Now, I did know, I was looking at this game, the sixth game down there, and this was actually an extra innings game, 14-5, they beat the Cubs. And so I said, okay, what are they doing the rest of the time? Now, this is the month of May for the most part, right? And they've scored, 49 runs? So that's still not bad. You're almost looking at, almost five runs a game, still playing pretty well. But I guess the concern is, now they did score six. They lose last night, by the way. I guess they don't have anyone on the board. They lose last night. And again, only scored one. They lose 2-1 last night, but 2-1 to the Twins, 3-1 to the Twins, win 3-1. Big one there. Only two runs. Get nine there. Get six there. But these last few games, and the last game is not on the board from last night, they've got 50 runs in the month. Last night, they only score one run. And I start looking at the Giants, and some disturbing things happen. Let me pop one thing on the board as far as the Giants are concerned. That's the wrong thing. Let me share my screen with you when it comes to the Giants. Look at this thing. This is a little bit scary, but fun at the same time. Position, performing by position. All right. So let's go through this. This is WAR. What is it good for? Absolutely nothing. Say it again. All right. So starting pitching wise, they're mid-range, right? Are the Giants. I just did this. They're near the bottom. So they are right there. So 23rd as far as starting pitching is concerned. Now let's go to the relief pitching, because they're really good in that. They're number one in WAR for relief pitching. Very nice. Non-pitching, all right, because their relief pitching is helping them so much. And remember, this is a really good team. Middle of the pack. Here's the part where it starts to get scary. Patrick Bailey's a really good defensive catcher, right? Okay. Dead last. Because of his hitting, his defense does not offset the fact that he is so poor at the plate. So dead last from a catching standpoint in WAR. First base, Lamont Wade Jr. and all, hitting .145, did not play last night, right here. Now, remember, there's three teams at 1.4. Only Cincinnati is worse at first base. You got to be really bad to be that bad. So Lamont Wade Jr. is killing him. Patrick Bailey, despite his defense, killing him. Second base, look at that. That's mostly Tyler Fitzgerald. Nice work. Third base, mostly Matt Chapman. Not bad. That's called first place. Shortstop, Willy Adames, not real good. He's not been great. Where was it? I knew I had these all down. I know he's near the bottom of this whole thing. There's Willy Adames right there. Not getting it from there. Left field, Ramos. They're fairly high up in this one. Right there. There's Ramos, mainly. Center field, Jung-Hoo Lee, right? He's playing great. Where is he at? Closer to the top than the bottom. Right field, Yastrzemski playing really well, closer to the top than the bottom. All outfield, by the way, not bad. You got some guys, again, you'll take that out of your outfield. Remember, this was an outfield a couple of years ago where you're like, oh, my God. So ninth as far as total outfield is concerned, DH not great. But right here, this is what I'm talking about. At catcher, killing you. At first base, killing you. Relief pitching, number one. Getting enough out of second base. There's an injury there. That's going to drop. Not bad at third base. Shortstop's got to be better, will be. Outfield, not too bad. So there's a reason why they are where they are. Wins above replacement as far as that goes. So that kind of was an interesting one today. And then let me share one more with you as far as the Giants are concerned. Let me just throw one more thing up there as far as the Giants are concerned. This is fun stuff. You'll love it. Let's see. What was the other one that I put up there? Yearly. I did that. Yearly starters. I already popped that one up. I guess that's it. Did I not have another one? Oh, this is just the series. So this is just what's coming up. So to me, Robbie Ray is their best. He is pitching tonight. He's been pitching really good. Brandon Fatt. Rodriguez versus Hicks. Hicks has been up and down, and then the A's come to town. So that should be interesting. So that's what's coming up as far as the Giants are concerned. Look, I'm not panicking over the Giants. It's just my point mainly was we know how poorly Lamont Wade Jr. is playing. I told you yesterday that Rhys Hoskins has a manageable contract that if they traded for him today, as we're a quarter of the way into the season, they'd owe him about $13.5 million this year. It's originally an $18 million deal, quarter of it. So they'd owe him about $13.5 million for the rest of this year. And then it's a mutual option for next year. So if Bryce Eldridge was ready, they could get rid of Hoskins. He's a Sacramento guy, Northern California, probably be very happy to come home. He's got about an 805 OPS. To me, if I'm Buster Posey, I'm calling Milwaukee, and Milwaukee's not out of it, and they probably don't think they are, and the Cubs are winning that division, but they've got some injury problems. So Milwaukee, which everybody counts out every single year, is probably sitting back going, man, we're not going to trade him early. I'd overpay to get him. That's how bad Lamont Wade Jr. is. And with Patrick Bailey, who you're not going to trade or not going to replace because of his defensive abilities, you can't have Lamont Wade Jr. doing this. So I talked about it yesterday. Rhys Hoskins would be a great get for the Giants. I would overpay. I can't wait till July. And there's got to be somebody within the organization that's better. But the thing that's scaring you, remember 2021, obviously, when they went 107, and they would go down to the minors, and everybody that they brought up to the minors seemed to have the magic wand do, and to use a crook and kite term, they had the magic wand do, and they would come in and they replaced guys. And it was like, wow, they've got some depth in the system. Now at first base, they are so barren of talent at first base that they have to keep running out Lamont Wade Jr. hitting 145 with terrible at-bats. They didn't last night, but you want Flores to be the DH generally, but he's got to play there, and they don't have anything better. At second base, Christian Kloss is pretty much an automatic out. He's hitting about 220 with a OPS in the fives. They don't have anybody better after Fitzgerald went down, so they don't have anybody better. Brent Wisely showed something a little bit early last year. He's lost that. He made some adjustments at the plate, and all of a sudden last year came up and was pretty decent for a while. They don't have better depth than Christian Kloss at second base. You're not going to replace Adames. You're not going to replace Chapman. Their outfield, as I just showed you from a war standpoint, is just fine. The starting pitching has had some bad luck late in games. The bullpen has been absolutely lights out, but for some reason when Justin Verlander pitches, somehow the bullpen isn't as good. Now, they were fine last night. It's just it was a 2-1 game, and the offense didn't show up last night. So it's just one of those kind of things. So anyway, I'm not down on the Giants at all. My main thing is, I wonder how long, if Bailey continues this, and I know he's a great defender, but he's last in WAR in the entire league. So even his defense isn't offsetting how bad his offense is. And we've seen a lot of great defensive catchers in this league, and they have value. You know, like I said, Maldonado, the Astros, has won gold gloves, but he's bounced around the league for a lot of time, and he was even a better hitter than what Patrick Bailey is. So I'm not necessarily down on Bailey, but you just can't live on defense alone. The league won't allow that because there's just not enough good hitters in the league to offset it. So when you have a zero at first base and you have a zero at second base and you have a zero at catcher, how long can your team keep its head above water with that kind of thing? Now, the relievers are great. The starters have been better than what their overall numbers say, and I hate that term, but it is true. If you look at just deeper analytics, the starters have been better than what their overall basic numbers say. So I think the pitching is going to be good enough. I think the relievers are going to be good enough. I think they've got depth. They've got some young players that could come up and replace some things. Mentioned Birdsong and Harrison and certain guys down at AAA. I think that they've got to go to Milwaukee and say, what is it going to take? Now, I'm not going to give you a top prospect. I'm not going to give you a Bryce Eldridge. I'm not going to give you one of my top pitchers, but they could make it worth Milwaukee's time to get Rhys Hoskins, because it's desperate time. Because then you can look at it and say, okay, Hoskins is solid. Eventually Fitzgerald's going to come back. Adames hopefully comes around. Chapman's there. You know, the outfield I just showed you is above average. One of the top, it's a top 10 outfield in Major League Baseball, and the pen's great. It's a glaring need at first base. And then they can be okay, kind of, with Patrick Bailey hitting the way he's not, or I should say not hitting at all. So that's the story as far as the Giants are concerned. You can give me a thought on that. Oh, you know what? I do have another Caboose pistol as well that I can give you in just a second. This has to do with Ricky Pearsall last night, but I can give you a little bit of that. I'll call that a Caboose pistol, and then I'll just tell you the story that I was going to tell you. How about that? All right. That's just, yeah, I'm going to do that. All right. What else do we have today? It's going to be, yeah, I agree with you. It'll be interesting to see what kind of moves Buster makes in a time of need. The need is now. You know, when you're first baseman, your regular first baseman's hitting 145, and I showed you it yesterday, two strikeouts and a pop out to first base on Sunday. And if you just watch, again, analytics say some things, whatever the case may be, but in this case, they don't lie. He's been that bad at the plate. The at-bats are horrible. And you can't have a catcher not hitting, a first baseman not hitting, a second baseman not hitting. You can't have three automatic outs in your lineup. You just can't. And they're doing it with smoke and mirrors right now offensively, but at some point they're just going to hit a wall in which the guys at the top of the order, Yastrzemski has been amazing to this point as far as he is concerned. Jung-Hoo Lee has carried for a while. Matt Chapman's had spurts. I know Adames is going to come around, but you can't have six batters in a nine-man lineup. It's just not going to happen. And at some point, the offense is going to hit the wall, especially at home, playing in this ballpark on a consistent basis. And last night, they scored one run. In Minnesota, they had one game in which they scored six, and then it was, you know, one run, one run, one run. Those things are going to happen more often. And Buster Posey's got to get ahead of it. And to me, Hoskins is a guy where it's like, bring that guy home. And a couple of years ago, I know they had discussions. I know he's had injuries. But that's another veteran in the clubhouse. It's a guy who can hit. I know they'd be right-handed heavy with him, but he's got an 805 OPS, which is far. I mean, that's light years, Joey light years ahead of where Lamont Wade Jr. is. And here's the pathetic part. If they had anything beyond him, they'd just release him. And they just release him, you know? I mean, he's been that bad. I mean, he's a player where I don't even know if another team, and they'd probably give him a minor league deal or something. And then the other thing that blows my mind about Lamont Wade Jr. is you got to put him down to the minors. How is he going to get his confidence back? You got to get another voice in his head. Go talk to another hitting coach down in Sacramento or Double A, or put him in Arizona or whatever the case may be. He needs a complete reset right now. And it's not physical. It's a mental thing. He goes up to the plate and he just doesn't look like he's in it. And it seems like every single time you look up, it's just one of those things. This is what happens when guys are scuffling. He's 0-2. He's constantly 0-2. And he was a guy in past years where, okay, even if he wasn't being a productive hitter, he was getting on base and he was always in like a 3-1 count. He's constantly an 0-2. And he's chasing, and it's just, they're just bad at bats. It's terrible at bats. So anyway, there is my rant when it comes to that. Believe me, I'm not saying that Reese Hoskins is awesome. I'm saying he's over an 800 OPS. He has like four home runs, 19 RBIs. I checked yesterday. I mean, even if he's an average hitting first baseman right now, Lamont Wade Jr. is, I mean, he's just, it's ugly to watch. Like, you just want to turn the channel. You're like, I don't even want to watch it. I feel bad for the guy. But at the very least, even if you're not going to make a move right now because you can't, because Milwaukee's going, well, give us this guy. Give us Kyle Harrison. I'm not giving you Kyle Harrison for Reese Hoskins. That's probably what they're asking for at this point. So I'm not doing that. But at the very least, you owe your organization, you owe the other guys in the clubhouse, send them out. Like, hear another voice. Go talk to the hitting coaches at Sacramento. Go get yourself some confidence in the minor leagues. I mean, to have him just bang his head against the ball again and again and again and again, it's a disservice to him, to the organization, to the other guys in the clubhouse. It's like, what are you going to do with this guy? Like, if he was a young player, he'd have been out a month ago. Like, his first couple of weeks, he would have been out. Like, this is bad. And it's not like he has a great hard hit rate or anything like that. Like, well, the analytics say he's going to come out of it. No, they don't. He's awful. He's atrocious. Sorry, dude. He got the mustache. He has a hit. Yeah, he played. I wish he could play first base. He played ball through high school, and then it was like, and he actually had some opportunities, but he's like, nah, I'm going to go into broadcasting, which I was like, don't go into broadcasting. Please don't go into broadcasting. But he didn't listen to me. That's probably what he needs. There's no question about it. He needs a slump buster. There's no question. He just, at the very least, you got to send him out. I mean, seriously, if I'm on the Giants and you want to be as positive as you can, and I'm sure you personally like Lamont Wade Jr., every time he comes up to bat, you're like, come on, man. Like, send the guy out. For his own good, like mentally, he's scuffling. You can see it in the at-bats. It's brutal. All right. Let me do a sweet, clean, family-friendly Caboose Pills, because one is a story, and then another, I'm going to do it based on – let me move this thing here. Another, I'm going to do it based on something that – I give Ricky Pearsall a ton of credit for this. You probably saw this yesterday, but I'm going to play this, and we'll use this kind of as a caboose, and then I'll just tell you a story about the caboose that I was supposed to put up here, but I can tell the story well enough without it.
John Lund Unleashed presents the Caboose Pistol.
Wedged in the crack of her buttocks.
Somehow, someway, Lundo thinks this is the best way to leave a final impression on you for the day.
The old Caboose Pistol, everybody has one.
Did you say Caboose
Pistol? I know some women who could hide a machine gun in there.
Yeah.
Leave me out of this, you weirdo. Here's John.
Not a weirdo. All right, so let me do two things here. How ballsy does Ricky Pearsall got to be? And I don't know, maybe he's been up to San Francisco since the incident, since he got shot last year. But if I went up to San Francisco and he was at the Warriors game last night, I sure as hell wouldn't wear that Rolex that the guy who shot him tried to rip. But look at the balls on Ricky Pearsall. There's the Rolex.
All scratched up. Hey, boy.
That's the Rolex that the guy was trying to steal.
Appreciate you.
That was the Rolex that the guy was trying to steal off him when he got shot in San Francisco. So what does he do? Goes to San Francisco, wears the same Rolex. I was like, bring it on, dude. Probably won't happen twice. I would probably put that Rolex in some sort of a safekeeping spot if I was going to roll up to San Francisco, but not Ricky Pearsall. He's a badass. So give him a ton of credit because I'm like, dude, I would never, if I got shot because of my Rolex in San Francisco, that Rolex would be like in a box somewhere. I wouldn't be wearing it, especially to the same city that I got shot in. But give Ricky Pearsall a ton of credit. And then the story I was going to tell you today, it was in the New York Post. And this is just going to keep happening. It's not for me. I like a real human being, and I'm old school, and I think most people are of our age. But this is going to happen more and more and more and more and more with people. Because you get to a certain age, and it's like, look, I don't want to go to the bars, and then you get to a certain age, and you're like, I don't want to go on the apps, and you go to a certain age. So anyway, there's this 58-year-old woman, and she is sans partner. She doesn't have anybody, and she was lonely and all this kind of stuff, and so she starts a relationship with an AI, not a robot. It's this AI thing that you can have a talking relationship with, and then that AI person gets to know you, or not person, thing gets to know you more and more and more and more and more. And you can actually make the AI character look a certain way. So she's got this guy that's kind of Clooney looking, George Clooney looking. And again, she's 58. And I wouldn't say that she is, I want to say this in a nice way, overly attractive, but you know, whatever, that shouldn't matter, but she's not overly attractive. And so she's having a difficult time at the age of 58. Like I said, you're not going out to the bars so much at 58. You're probably maybe not, you don't want to be in the apps maybe at 58. And so she's decided to go the AI route. And within this story, it talks about how more and more people are going this route. And not only does she have, is she having a relationship with this person and feels like she is in a relationship. So she doesn't want to date real people because she's in a relationship with this AI robot. But again, it's not a physical robot. So she's in this, and but there's pictures of her with this thing that she has created, all this kind of stuff. And she's decided to marry it. So then there's pictures of her marrying this AI image and all this kind of stuff. And within the piece, they're talking to these psychologists who are saying that this is going to be more and more of a thing as we continue on in this, and that people just want companionship, and she can talk to this AI created person and all this kind of stuff. And she actually says that they the way they have sex is through sexting. And so they go back and forth, and the AI thing goes back to her, oh, you are so hot, and da 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 da, which again doesn't do it for me. That I, as I get older, and believe me, I'm done with relationships, I'm done with marriage. I mean, I have a beautiful wife and am very lucky because of those things. So I don't anticipate that would be something that is going to happen. But again, it's a piece that was in the New York Post and talks about this 58-year-old woman that has this AI marriage. And they talk and they discuss and they have feelings, and the thing gets to know you better and what your needs are and everything like that. And then, like I said, for sex, she's sex, but she considers herself in a relationship. She considers herself off the market. She considers herself married. And the psychologists say, yeah, there's going to be more and more of this happening as time goes on, because these things are going to get better and better and better and better and get to know you better, be able to react better and give you more and all those kind of things. And I'm like, oh my God, like, you got to be kidding me. Like, I would not consider myself, and like, okay, hey, would you like to date? No, I'm in a relationship. Like, can you imagine you're at the grocery store, or you're at a, you know, whatever, you're having dinner or something, and someone approaches you and says, yeah, I think you're very beautiful or handsome or whatever the case may be. And would you, can I get your number? I'd like to go out with you. No, I'm sorry, I'm married. Excuse me? Yeah, I'm married. You see this ring on my finger? I'm married. And His, you know, it's got, I forgot the guy's name too. She named the thing. She made it kind of look, like I said, like Clooney and all this kind of stuff. And she's got pictures of him. You know, they're obviously computer generated pictures of her and this guy and their marriage pictures and all this stuff. And she has them around her house and it's like, oh my God, that's where we're going. Oh my God. Anyway, there you go. There's your sweet, clean, family friendly caboose pills. I'm not doing that. I don't care. If my current wife passes away, that's it. I'm single. I'm not going to have some AI generated thing. I don't need to talk to some AI generated thing. I'm not having sex with him. What are you wearing? Ooh, that's hot. That even creeped me out. That just creeped me out right there. Creeped me out that I said that. Creeped me out that I even thought about that. Anyway, there you go. Too much. What else? It's just, I mean, to me, I'm just not doing it, man. I'm just like, that's it. It's human beings or bust. This is becoming more often. I saw a story about a guy, AI girlfriend, and saying, yeah, I mean, and she feels like she'd be cheating. Like in the piece, it says, I can't date anyone else. I'm married. I consider myself married. And then it's got, like I said, it's got AI generated pictures of her and this guy. And she made him nice looking. I mean, like they're having a, there's like a virtual glass of wine in front of him. And they're like at a virtual restaurant and her arms around him. And he's like, you know, Clooney looking guy. I mean, obviously it's, you know, it's not a real person and you can tell that, but she's got pictures around her house like that. And then, like I said, to have sex, they sexed. I'm just like, ugh, ugh, no. It's not going to do it for me. Not going to do it for me. So there you go. That is your sweet, clean, family-friendly caboose pistol. So to recap everything today, episode 139, Warriors lose 117-110 to the Warriors. They're down 3-1. Edwards and Randle have been the best two players in the series. Too bad that they didn't take advantage early because, and I mean in the series, when Edwards wasn't playing well, but now with his confidence level, too late. Three ball was the culprit last night. 16-8 was the numbers. So -8 times 3, -24. Starters 90-57 over the Warriors. Obviously, the Steph Curry effect. JK was the best player on the floor for the Warriors. 23. Tired Jimmy, 5-9, 14 points. Bad excuse. The rest of the playoffs, Jason Tatum goes down. The Mavs win the lotto, which is bad news for the Warriors because they're going to be better next year with Cooper Flagg. San Antonio gets number two. I think, although it's a great point by some, maybe Giannis doesn't want to go to San Antonio. I think he might want to. I think that's where he's going to end up with that second pick going to Milwaukee, along with other players. I think the Spurs are going to make moves. The Rockets are going to make moves. Obviously, Oklahoma City's good. I think the West is going to be even more difficult, and the Warriors will be a year older. No international games for the 49ers. Tomorrow we will go over the schedule when it is released, what, 5 o'clock Pacific time? And we'll play the game that is sweeping the nation, win-loss game. So we'll do that. No international 49ers games. Talked about that when I covered that game between the Raiders and the Dolphins back in 14. Giants offense, just something to keep an eye on. And if Buster could make a move at first base, probably too early for that. Sweet, clean, family-friendly caboose pistol. Ricky Pearsall showing the balls to wear the Rolex. I would not be able to do that if I got shot in that same city. And then you come into the same city, roll into that same city, and wear the same Rolex. That's ballsy, but that's Ricky Pearsall. The AI, it's inevitable. It's inevitable, but I would not go AI. I'd rather be lonely. Thank you very much. And I think that's it. Anything else? Anything else? I will not be with you tonight unless news breaks. I will be with you tomorrow at 8 a.m. on the show and tomorrow night for what might be the final Warriors postgame show of the year if they can't get it done in Minnesota. So there you go. Any questions, comments, thoughts? By the way, James, good to see you, man. Yeah, you can catch up at any point. Like I said, not only can you catch up by just going back now if you want to the beginning. We spent the first hour on the Warriors. But also remember, I'll put the chapters up, but that's only at John Lund Unleashed on YouTube. So come back to John Lund Unleashed on YouTube, subscribe, get those alerts on and hit us with the like, please, before you get out of here today on John Lund Unleashed on YouTube. And so that the algorithm will like us, but I will put the chapters up right underneath the show here. And then you can click to whatever it is that your heart desires. So if you want to hear about the Warriors or talk, you know, hear me talk about the Warriors or get into the Warriors or whatever, that is fine. That's the way that we can do it. Anything else before we get out of here on a Tuesday edition? Thank you, Nutter. Thank you, Papa J. Do remember, please like and subscribe to both channels, John Lund Unleashed and to the Bay Area Sports Collective. And do remember, I love comments. You don't have to agree with me. Comments, questions, thoughts, hit me up right under here on the YouTube channel on John Lund Unleashed or the Bay Area Sports Collective. Also, I'm on X quite a bit, at John Lund Radio, so you can hit me up with questions, comments, and thoughts as well. There, please. And remember, Bay Area Sports Collective, that means Polymac, Polymac's Particles, along with Creative Tony. It means Tom Tolbert, who did a great post-game show last night that you can go back and watch if you want to learn more about the Warriors' loss last night. And also, it means Rod Brooks and Quality Hang, and we'll be adding more shows as needed. But they don't tell me that anymore because I let the cat out of the bag because I'm terrible at keeping secrets. So there you go. That is the show for today. Remember, subscribe to John Lund Unleashed on YouTube. And for all things Unleashed, go to johnlundunleashed.com. I'm due for new columns, so I'll write a new column there on the blog. Also, remember, we got archive shows, archive podcasts. We will put the podcast on Apple, Spotify, your favorite places right after the show as well. But you can check all those things out, plus merchandise is on there. Links to social media are on there as well, the blog, all sorts of things, and that all on John Lund Unleashed. That is episode 139 for May. Oh, by the way, one thing, don't leave. May 13th, 2025, and I must say that today would have been my father's 85th birthday, George Lund. So my dad is George Lund. My son is George Lund. I actually have a GRL tattoo for both of them right here on the back of my arm that when the weather's better, I'll let you see. But because it's too cold for me. I have thin California blood. But yeah, my dad would have been 85, died of pancreatic cancer. He diagnosed to death in 84 days. So I always tell you, please get checked out. I've had my scares with cancer as well. So please, please, please get checked out for those kind of things. We want you to be around. And yeah, my dad would have been 85, died of pancreatic cancer in 2014, June 12, 2014. His birthday is May 30, 1940. And what a great dude. And on May 13th of 2014, he had that pancreatic. We knew he didn't have very much time. And what was so cool was everybody that had ever done business, I've never seen anything like this. He got about, I'm not even kidding you, 1,000 birthday cards, like 1,000. And he was sick. And we sat there and we read every single one of them to him. And all these stories that people wrote about him took this time. A lot of people, like on a separate piece of paper, folded very nicely, wrote these incredible things about him and told stories about him and everything. And we literally just read all these different things. And we said, hey, man, if you just send him a note, it'd make his day. And it was just so cool. It was the coolest thing ever. I mean, you know, as cool as something like that can be. But I mean, to have all these birthday cards on May 13th, 2014, and we read them and he was so happy about it, to have everybody reach out and do those kind of things. So happy heavenly birthday to my pops. He would have been 85 today, and he's the reason I named my son George as well, because I thought my dad was so great. We all think that, but I had an opportunity to work with my dad, so I saw it across the board, and what an awesome dude. So anyway, just wanted to get that in there. May 13th was my dad's birthday, so it is always a special day for me. So thanks for letting me go off on a bit of a diatribe about that as well. So happy birthday, Pops. All right, everybody have a great rest of your day. I'm glad I remembered that at the end. Everybody have a great rest of your day. Always appreciate you guys hanging out with us. Remember, make sure that you subscribe to both channels. Hang out. Have a great rest of the day. Keep those alerts on because you never know. We're going to need to jump back on. Maybe they'll have some more news about Steph Curry early. Who knows? So everybody have a tremendous, tremendous Tuesday. Appreciate you hanging out with us on John Lund Unleashed. If we don't talk later on today, then we'll talk tomorrow at 8 a.m. on John Lund Unleashed. So please make sure you subscribe and have those alerts on. Have a great Tuesday, everybody.
Thanks for hanging out with John Lund Unleashed. We'll try to be better next time, though I wouldn't hold my breath. Please like and subscribe on the John Lund Unleashed Pod YouTube channel. Watch live shows weekdays at 8 a.m. on YouTube, Instagram, and X. And make sure to have your alerts on for shows throughout the day or night. All things Lund can be found at johnlundunleashed.com. johnlundunleashed.com.
Goodbye!